From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Waugh. Gulf of Alaska cod loses its sustainability certification. The loss of the blue sticker is not because of poor management. Rather, it's warming waters, which decreased stocks, and fewer young cod in the fishery. Warmer waters are directly related to the most recent iteration of the blob. Now scientists say it may be subsiding. And finally, the general manager of a regional hatchery in Southeast Alaska is retiring. Steve Reifenstuhl looks back at his 40-year career. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
After 10 years of certification, Gulf of Alaska cod will have its blue sticker sustainability label suspended starting next month. After a climate change-caused crash pushed Gulf cod to near overfished status last year, the suspension of the Marine Stewardship Council blue label did not come as a surprise to the industry. The MSC is a leading standard bearer for sustainable fisheries around the world, and right now, impacts of losing MSC certification are still unclear. With no federal cod fishery this season and only a small state fishery, there isn't a lot of Gulf cod to be sold this year anyway. An independent audit of the fishery this winter essentially found that cod stocks aren't big enough, and not enough young cod are entering the fishery. That's what triggered the suspension. The auditor was clear, however, that the suspension is not a result of poor management. Rather, it blames the 2013 to 2016 marine heat wave that decimated cod stocks in the Gulf. In fact, the report stated, GOA Pacific cod stock and fishery continue to be extremely well managed and monitored. Right now, the MSC does not distinguish between climate-caused suspensions and management-caused suspensions, something industry players criticized when it became clear Gulf cod was close to suspension. In a statement, Julie Decker, the executive director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, said, "We believe that responsible management should be rewarded and hope this unfortunate situation will be a catalyst for the MSC program to make changes to address future scenarios such as this." In January, an MSC spokesperson told Alaska's Energy Desk that distinguishing climate change-caused fishery suspensions is worth taking another look at, though no actions have been taken yet.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard-accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amse.org or 907-747-3287.
This past summer, the Pacific Ocean was hit with the second marine heat wave of the decade, mirroring the first so-called blob of 2014. Scientists measured ocean temperatures more than 5 degrees above normal across millions of square miles stretching from Alaska to California. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Kavitha George reports that, for now, it looks like it's subsiding.
The first blob decimated fisheries, caused a massive seabird die-off, and spurred toxic algal blooms up and down the coast. In the last year and a half, a second heat wave began brewing. But then it disappeared, at least for now. NOAA research scientist Nate Mantua says they're seeing surface ocean temperatures drop back to the 30-year average before the first blob.
Parts of the Bering Sea, the temperatures are a little below normal, which is nice to see for the first time for a few years. And most of the area around the Aleutians and the coastal waters in Alaska are back to about normal, normal being the average from 1981 to 2010.
But that's not to say that the troubling long-term warming trend that comes with climate change has slowed. Mantua says we may see short-term warm and cold periods, but the warming trend will continue.
It could go either way in the next few months, in the next year, but the longer term, you know, next few decades, you'd expect that that background warming is just going to continue to build up.
University of Washington oceanographer Nick Bond says it's important to note that the North Pacific never fully returned to normal temperatures after the first blob. The second blob just compounded the heat wave, warming waters at a greater depth and at higher temperatures than before. This winter brought cold northern winds and heavy storms to Alaska. Storms help to mix up ocean waters and release heat trapped below the surface. But Bond says deeper ocean layers are still hotter than normal.
This winter, there has been some cooling of those subsurface temperature anomalies, but they're still well above normal. And I think for some of us, there's just some concern that even if these storms keep up, they won't remove all that extra heat at depth.
Chris Holderide is a NOAA scientist who studies algal blooms in Kachemak Bay. She says it's hard to tease out what the effects of this most recent heat wave are and what's just a hangover from the first blob. It's not always easy to predict where toxic algal blooms will pop up, but recent rising ocean temperatures brought them to many parts of coastal Alaska, she says.
There were some areas that actually had fairly high blooms and more paralytic shellfish poisoning, and then some that didn't. And what we're finding up in the Bering and Chukchi Seas in the Arctic is that there's some very high levels of these cells that cause paralytic shellfish poisoning. And that, with the really warm temperatures that they had up there, is a big concern.
But with these somewhat colder waters, Holderide is hopeful that coastal ecosystems might start to bounce back.
We're going into this spring and summer with the waters actually getting cooled off a bit. And you can imagine that the near coastal waters, right, the shallower waters, can cool off faster because they're not as deep, right? There's not as much water to cool off. And so we're hopeful that for the near coastal ecosystems, that'll be an advantage. But it remains to be seen.
Monitoring over the next few months and fishery surveys this year will help give a clearer picture of the ecosystem impacts of the second blob. But right now, scientists say it's just too soon to know for certain. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960, or online at alaskaboat.com.
Here are some numbers about Americans and seafood appetite. Americans eat just under 15 pounds of seafood per person each year. That compares to more than 108 pounds of red meat and nearly 73 pounds of poultry. America's seafood appetite is being fed mostly by foreign imports. More than 85% of all fish and shellfish eaten in the U.S. comes from other countries. Alaska seafood favorites have remained largely the same. The top five are shrimp, salmon, canned tuna, pollock, and tilapia. And finally this week, the head of a regional hatchery organization in Southeast Alaska is retiring after a 40-year career with the Sitka-based nonprofit. Steve Reifenstuhl is general manager of the Northern Southeast Regional Aquaculture Association, also known as NSERA. It has projects throughout the Northern Panhandle, including salmon releases near Cake and Thomas Bay near Petersburg. Reifenstuhl is set to retire on March 15th. He was the keynote speaker at the Petersburg Chamber of Commerce annual banquet in February at the Sons of Norway Hall. He said he was incredibly fortunate to work for fishermen his entire career.
There's some out here in the audience that used to be on the board, some in the audience where their dads were on the board. There is a current Entrav board member here, at least one that I know of. And it's just been the greatest privilege of my life to be able to do that. Salt of the earth, people that work from dawn to the next dawn to make a living, to bring the fish back to port. And it's just a remarkable group of people.
Reifenstuhl highlighted some of the history of the state's nonprofit hatcheries. He noted that fishermen agreed to tax themselves to support a portion of hatchery operations, but didn't start seeing a return on their investment for over a decade.
When you look at this at this point, or this stage, it looks like, yeah, of course they did this. This is an obvious thing to do. 7-to-1 benefit to cost, who wouldn't? But they didn't know that at the time. And so I take my hat off to all those individuals that voted for this kind of program, put their faith in it, and let us as the biologists work out the details, and it's been a tremendous success.
The most recent record-setting success was a bumper crop of 3-year chum salmon that flooded into a remote release site south of Sitka in 2018. The Perth Seine fleet, in a one-day opening at Crawfish Inlet, caught over 1 million chum salmon late that summer. The proceeds from sale of those salmon were a big economic boost for Ensera and helped salvage an otherwise disappointing season for some fishermen. Reifenstuhl took over as general manager of Ensera in 2009 after a long career with the organization. Not all was in management, however. He got his start exploring remote lakes for coho rearing. The long days of solitude in the wilderness helped condition him for his other career as one of the state's most successful adventure athletes. After his retirement, Reifenstuhl will be succeeded as general manager by Ensera's current operations manager, Scott Wagner.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Joe Vicnicki at KFSK in Petersburg, Tavitha George with Alaska's Energy Desk, and Lainey Welch with Alaska Fish Radio. Be sure to check your safety gear before you head out. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.